move on to the next case of the morning, which would be Lila Tinder versus Pinkerton. Mr. Kine or Kenny, whichever it is.
May it please the court. My name is Paul Kinney. I represent Lila Tinder, the appellant. Ms. Tinder was hired by Pinkerton in October 1996. Her last day of work at Pinkerton was in November of 1998. After that date, she filed a charge with the EEOC alleging sex discrimination and retaliation. On March 27, she filed a complaint in U.S. District Court reflecting those same claims. On September 25, 2000, the District Court granted the motion for a stay in the proceedings and ordered the case to arbitration. On September 27, 2001, the District Court entered judgment in Pinkerton's favor, extinguishing all claims, and then in October of 2001, Tinder filed her notice of appeal. The District Court's decision with respect to ordering the case to arbitration should be reversed, and the case should be remanded to the District Court for a trial there. Because the arbitration agreement was not an enforceable contract, there was no mutual exchange of promises, nor did Pinkerton tell Tinder that she would be terminated if she did not agree to abide by the arbitration agreement.
Mr. Kennedy, did you ever present any evidence that would establish that the posters were not at Ms. Tinder's workplace, or that she didn't see the internal magazine article or the second payroll stuffer?
My client claimed that she had no knowledge of the existence of the agreement, and that would be in with respect to any of the postings. I believe the affidavit goes directly to the initial envelope stuffer.
And that's the only evidence is her recollection?
The only explicit evidence. And her actions were consistent with the fact that she did not know that she was subject to the arbitration agreement. If she had known that she was subject to the arbitration agreement, she would not have filed a charge in the EEOC, nor would she have gone ahead and filed her complaint in federal court. Even if she would have known of the arbitration agreement, it would not have been enforceable because there was, it does not reflect any meeting of the mind. Under Wisconsin contract law, there must be a meeting of the mind in order for a valid contract to exist. There actually has to be an agreement between the parties about the terms of the contract for it to be enforceable. Meade versus Reeling, 266 Wisconsin Reporter 523, 64 Northwest 2nd, 222, 1954, and the Goosen versus State v. Statert, 189 Wiz 2nd, 237, 525 Northwest 2nd, 314, Court App, 1994. Pinkerton, essentially in arguing that the agreement as stated bound Tinder to the arbitration because her employment continued, really falls victim to a logical error. It affirmed the antecedent of Pinkerton's syllogism. The example of fallacy in this case, if Ms. Tinder agreed to abide by the arbitration agreement, then she will continue working. Pinkerton seeks to affirm the antecedent by saying Tinder continued working, therefore she agreed to abide by the agreement. The fact that she continued working is not evidence that there was a meeting of the minds.
Is that evidence that she just didn't know about it?
Yes, that's consistent with the fact that she didn't know about it.
You said something earlier that had she known about it, she wouldn't have filed the suit. Had she known about it, would she have quit?
Well, if she had known about it, she probably wouldn't have quit because she would have needed the money. The fact is that it still would not have been an enforceable agreement under the facts of this case because Pinkerton never told her that it would terminate her if she didn't agree to it.
Let me ask you this. Are you saying that even if she had received the stuffer, because, you know, her position is she didn't see it or she doesn't remember it, but if she'd seen the flyer and she'd seen the stuffer, even then there wouldn't have been an agreement?
Yes.
There wouldn't have been a meeting of the mind?
Yes, because she would have continued working under the assumption that that she wasn't going to agree to it. Pinkerton never told her that if she did not agree to the arbitration agreement, that it would terminate her. Her actions are consistent with her not knowing about the agreement. Her actions are also consistent with a decision on her part not to be bound by the agreement, but to continue working anyway. The Gibson case stands for the proposition that if consideration is going to be based on continued employment, that the promise has to be explicit. The Gibson court held that in that case it was never communicated to the employee that if she signed the understanding, she could continue working there, and that if she did not, her status would be uncertain. This case, the employer in Pinkerton, committed the same error. This case suffers from the same error that was present in the Gibson case. Ms. Tinder was never told by Pinkerton that if she refused to agree to the arbitration agreement, that she would be terminated. Therefore, her continued employment there cannot be considered consideration for her agreement to the arbitration agreement.
Well, first of all, of course, Gibson is an Indiana case.
Correct.
So it really doesn't have, any value in determining what Wisconsin courts would do. Or hold.
The Gibson case, though, is consistent with Wisconsin law, as Wisconsin law is reflected in the NBZ case. In the NBZ case, there was a covenant not to compete. But the analysis...
Are you talking about Pilkarski?
The Pilkarski case, yes.
Well, but Pilkarski concluded that the employer didn't condition the covenant on continued employment, whereas here the policy in this case was conditioned on continued employment.
I would aver, Your Honor, that it was not conditioned on continued employment. The employer told Ms. Tinder that it was its opinion that if she continued working there, that she would be bound by the agreement. It did not say that if she did not agree to the agreement, she would be terminated. That's the key difference.
Is there anything in the record that indicates anybody who didn't sign it, what happened to them?
There is no evidence in the record with respect to... Well, there was nothing to sign, Your Honor.
Pardon me?
There was nothing to sign in this case.
What is it that... What I misunderstood, but what was it if she didn't agree or didn't do something, they'd be terminated?
The brochure upon which Pinkerton relies states as follows. They do it in a question and answer form. Question, right. What if I do not want to be covered by this binding arbitration agreement? Pinkerton then seeks to answer its own question. Effective January 1, 1998, all employees are covered with the program. By remaining employed through the effective date, you are agreeing to be covered by the program and you waive the right to a court trial. Nowhere in that statement does it tell Ms. Tinder that if she refuses to agree to the arbitration agreement, that she will be terminated. All that would have told Ms. Tinder if she would have actually known about it was it shared Pinkerton's opinion, its view, its unilateral position with respect to the contract. I see my time has expired, so if there are other questions, I will reserve my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Brooks?
May it please the court, my name is Amy Brooks. I'm representing the appellee Pinkerton Security. I would like to address first Judge Roedner's question and the response that Mr. Kinney gave to it regarding the evidence that was in the district court's record as to whether Ms. Tinder received the brochure. The district court stated in its opinion that Ms. Tinder's position that she didn't receive it was untenable in light of the substantial evidence presented by the defendant in to establish that she had in fact received the agreement. And that evidence consisted of documentary evidence, declarations by the company officials responsible for distributing those brochures and the like, and also there was additional follow-up material. And Judge Roedner was correct in pointing out that Ms. Tinder's affidavit simply states that she does not recall seeing the initial brochure. It says nothing about the follow-up material.
Will the record reveal why Pinkerton chose not to use an acknowledgement form, even though it obviously knew the significance of the change it was making?
No, Your Honor. We would assert that Pinkerton is a huge company and that it had issued, the record does reflect that it had issued other policy changes where no signature or acknowledgement form was signed by the employees, and that, quite frankly, had this been developed more as an issue at the district court, we would have presented it. In the court's order for the briefing schedule, it gave the parties the opportunity to request a hearing to present testimony, and Ms. Tinder did not take advantage of that opportunity.
Now, several of these cases that your opponent cites appear to me to be distinguishable, particularly that Gibson case and the NBZ case, because there was no promise of continued employment.
Well, Your Honor, the key case that we're relying on is the Michalski case, because that's a Seventh Circuit decision that was decided based on Wisconsin law. And those facts were quite similar to those in the case at hand, in that case, Circuit City issued a unilaterally implemented arbitration program, however, during mid-employment, and it did allow employees to take an affirmative step to opt out of that agreement, but if they chose not to, or if they did nothing, they were automatically in the agreement. So it's very similar in terms of the time of the employment and the consideration that was offered. That is, it offered continued employment, and it offered that the company would be mutually bound by the agreement. As to the NBZ case, I think that Judge Roedner's question was a good one, because actually the NBZ case did not hold that continued at-will employment would not provide sufficient consideration, but rather it was an appellate court and noted that the lower court had not received any evidence that employment was in fact conditioned on the employee's agreement to the covenant in that case. In that case, it was the covenant not to compete. And so the lower court had no evidence before it to find that such employment was conditioned upon it. And we respectfully assert that had evidence in that case been presented that continued employment was conditioned upon the employee's acceptance of the agreement, that the outcome of the case would have been different. The mandatory arbitration of this agreement, if you break it down to its simple elements, is a binding contract. There are all three requisite elements. There is offer, there is acceptance, and there's consideration. There is really no dispute as to an offer. Pinkerton made an offer to continue Ms. Tinder's employment and to be bound itself by the mandatory arbitration agreement in exchange for her agreement to be bound by the arbitration agreement. There was acceptance on Ms. Tinder's part. Wisconsin law, just as in the Michalski case, well, Wisconsin law does not require a written signature by the employee in order to accept or expressly accept an agreement. Rather, a party may be bound by their actions, and by her continuing to work after January 1st of 98, the effective date of the program, she was impliedly consenting to the agreement. And then lastly, we have consideration. And the consideration was two parts of consideration. It was the mutual agreement by Pinkerton to be bound by the arbitration agreement as well, and then there is the issue about continued at-will employment. The first part of the consideration is actually much more important and much clearer to realize that that's sufficient consideration based on the Michalski decision. And Pinkerton attacks the sufficiency of that first part of consideration through using public policy arguments and the like and trying to claim that this is a valueless benefit to her. But I would offer that public policy clearly favors enforcement of private arbitration agreements, and that this agreement did in fact represent a detriment to Pinkerton. How it would represent a detriment to Pinkerton, I can give an example. Let's say a former employee resigned and took confidential information and trade secrets belonging to Pinkerton, and Pinkerton thought it was necessary to bring a claim in a court of law against this employee to obtain immediate injunctive relief. By virtue of the arbitration agreement, Pinkerton would not be able to do so. And so there is a mutual detriment and benefit to both parties.
What is the issue of termination? It seems that it was Kinder wasn't obligated to quit by disagreeing with this, was she?
Well, actually that's been referred to as the Hobson's choice in this case, but that's what she was faced with.
Would it mean she said, I don't agree to arbitrate, I'm filing suit, then she had to quit.
Yes, that's it. But that is not unlike the decision of this court in the Kovaleski case. Now, I understand that's based on Illinois law, but there it was a take-it-or-leave-it agreement by the employer as well. And a good example of an employer's ability to do that is, of course, they can change other policies on a going-forward basis as well. If Pinkerton were to say, unfortunately, employees, we've promised you to give you health insurance benefits in X dollar value, but as of January 1st, we need to reduce that. And as of if you remain employed with us, you'll get a lower value of benefits. And so, using that analogy, Kinder would not be able to say that, oh, as of January 1, I don't like it. I'm not going to take it. I refuse to take that cut. I mean, the next logical step is that Pinkerton would either pay her at the lower rate, reduce her benefits, or fire her. Now, Pinkerton's brochure is phrased in such a way as to be to show this program as a favored document. It's upbeat. It doesn't contain harsh language which says you will be terminated, but it does clearly address the question as to what if an employee does not want to be covered by the agreement. I believe that all of the other points are addressed in the brief, so I won't repeat them here, unless you have any other questions. Thank you.
Thanks. Kenny?
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Brooks addressed acknowledgement forms in virtually every, if not every, case cited in the briefs. The employee was only held to have exchanged promises where there was something in writing, documenting the fact that the employee knew, understood, and received the employer's proposed arbitration agreement. Furthermore, there's been some discussion of the Michalski case. The Michalski case, in fact, was one of those cases where the employee was presented with the arbitration agreement and asked to acknowledge the plaintiff's agreement in that case. Furthermore, in Michalski, the plaintiff was offered an opt-out provision. In other words, the plaintiff was given an opportunity to specifically state whether the plaintiff agreed or didn't agree with the agreement. That was not presented with my client. She should not be held responsible for the errant assumptions of the employer.
Okay, fine.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. The case will be taken under advisement.